might not be an A, but you are a B plus. Solid B plus.
Welcome back to the Solid B Plus Podcast. It's been a few weeks since my last show. I know I said I was going to try and start doing them more often, but I mean, it's more often than I did it all through the spring, which was not at all, so whatever. It's been a few weeks, but you know, I went on vacation, so I didn't have the ability to put a show together. Sorry? I don't know. Plus, you know, I'd been on Ring Rust Radio the past couple weeks. I was on the Patreon Mark Madness Tournament and the Season 13 Fantasy League draft. So if you missed the Solid B Plus Podcast but you still wanted to hear my awesome voice, you could check out those episodes, because I'm not all over them, but you know, I'm there. I'm the highlight, if you will. That was terrible. I think I started trying to do a Dusty, but it was Anyway, there's a lot to talk about on the show this week. The Cruiserweight Classic is underway. We're right in the middle of Ultima Lucha. The G1 Climax is beginning soon, and there's lots of other stuff to talk about. But before that, the Solid B Plus Podcast can be found on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, which helps the show become more visible to other wrestling fans. And if you do subscribe, you'll never miss an episode, since it'll just magically show up in your downloads like a present on Christmas morning. And you won't have to constantly check to see whether or not I put a show out, because I probably didn't. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joe Archie, J-O-E-A-R-C-H-Y. Give the show a like on Facebook. Send the show an email, solidbpluspodcast@gmail.com. And with all that out of the way, let's get into NXT. Episode of NXT TV, it was main evented by the dream match between Finn Balor and Shinsuke Nakamura, and it really was an awesome, excellent match, especially since it was just a TV match. And all throughout, Finn Balor was working a little bit more aggressively than usual, and he was targeting Nakamura's knee like all throughout the match and trying to make him tap out. And I wouldn't really go as far as saying that Balor was working heel, but you could definitely see how his actions in the ring were starting to trend more towards working heel than he has done in the past. But in the end, Nakamura picked up the victory, and he's definitely next in line to face Samoa Joe for the NXT title. And that match, a Samoa Joe Shinsuke Nakamura title match, should be incredibly hard-hitting and probably produce Nakamura's best match in NXT yet. Oh yeah, and also Rhino showed up again on the most recent episode. I think he tore apart a few tag teams. Or no, that was 2 weeks ago when he beat up Blake and Murphy and the Hype Bros when they were having a tag match. And then last week, I think he interrupted Samoa Joe when Joe was doing a promo. So Rhino, Samoa Joe, I think is happening this coming week. And I can't imagine Rhino will stick around long after this. I mean, especially since his career in politics is just beginning, which is actually true. He's running to become a state senator, or state representative for his district in Michigan, which is just really, really strange. I never would have expected Rhino, of all people, to get into politics. But regardless, it's still cool that, you know, a WWE vets and, you know, high-profile guys can just show up in NXT like this every once in a while. And it makes for a more exciting product, makes for a must-see show, if you want to call it that. As far as the tag title picture goes in NXT, it seems like American Alpha is going to be drafted, since they lost to the Revival in a 2 out of 3 falls match. And then next, they face the new monster team, the Authors of Pain. So I can't see the Authors of Pain losing anytime soon. So it kind of seems like this is the pattern for guys going up from NXT, as they go out on their backs, which it's not a bad thing, but It's starting to, you can kind of see where this is going. Like Alpha, they came up, they got real popular, they won the titles, they lost the titles, and there's really nowhere else for them to go except to the main roster. But in terms of the tag titles in NXT, I'd have to say that either Gargano and Ciampa or TM61 are the best choices for contenders right now. And since Gargano and Ciampa have been there a little bit longer and hold a win over the Revival, they're most likely going to get the next shot. But I'd have to imagine that the Authors of Pain are going to get the belt soon. But the Revival will have to lose them first. And it's probably either going to be Gargano and Ciampa or TM61 who takes the belts from the Revival. But I'm not really sure when that's going to be. It could be a little while before that happens. And in the women's division, Bayley faces Nia Jax next, and whoever wins that is pretty much the number one contender. And I'm not really sure at all why Bayley is still in NXT, but I mean, another match with Asuka would definitely make it worthwhile to still have her in NXT for this long. But as far as the rest of the women's division goes, I really hope some new female wrestlers start showing up soon and start showing up more regularly on NXT, since it's going to be pretty thin once Bayley leaves. I mean, recent spoilers seem to indicate that Nia Jax might be getting called up as well. And if she does, that really leaves just the champion Asuka, Carmella, and Alexa Bliss as the regulars on the NXT women's roster, which is not enough to carry a division. And since I mentioned call-ups before, the SmackDown Live draft is happening, I think it's this week already. It always seems so far off in the future, but I think it's this coming Tuesday. And I mentioned Nia Jax getting called up before. Bayley is going to probably, she's got to get called up eventually. But Finn Balor is probably going to get called up. And I also think that Austin Aries might be getting called up too, since, I mean, he's one of the most talented guys in NXT right now. And he doesn't really need to be there because he already can work their style pretty well. He's already used to working TV matches. So there's not really a reason to keep him in NXT much longer. And because of the fact that he's already worked both face and heel programs with people, it's outside of showing that he can do all that stuff, there's not much other reason to keep him in NXT. But honestly, there could be some NXT surprises in the draft too, because I mean, who would have thought that Apollo Crews would get called up as soon as he did? So I mean, it really, like, anyone seems like they could be fair game. But this past week was also the first week of the Cruiserweight Classic on the WWE Network, and I think that everyone had high hopes for the CWC, and to me, it's definitely something much different from usual WWE programming, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's presented much more of a serious product than the main roster or even NXT is presented, with the focus being on wrestling as a sport. And that notion is really only reinforced by the excellent analysis and commentary from Daniel Bryan and Mauro Ranallo. And the first week of matches featured Grand Metalik defeating Alejandro Saiz, Ho-Ho Lun defeating Arya Davari, Cedric Alexander defeating Clement Patois, I don't know how you say that, and Kota Ibushi defeating Sean Maluda. And there were some really solid matches to start with for week one. Saiz put on a good performance against Metalik, and I think Saiz showed a lot more than people were expecting him to, at least that's what I felt anyway, and Metalik just showed off all of the crazy lucha skills. I mean, there's plenty that he's got, you know, left in reserve that he hasn't shown off yet, but even in just the short match that they got to have, both of those guys really impressed me. Cedric Alexander's win was also very impressive, and it makes ROH look pretty dumb for barely using him over the years. Ibushi put on a great high-flying performance, and he'll face Alexander next in what should be just a really athletic, really hard-hitting match. And there's also rumors that Ibushi has been signed to a WWE contract, but I can't see that happening. I can't see that being for real yet. I mean, maybe it'll be a sort of thing like Gargano and Ciampa have, where he can just show up and work matches every once in a while, but to me, it kind of, Ibushi always seemed like the guy that really values his freedom as a highly sought-after free agent, and I can't see someone like him wanting to be stuck in a company that is, by all accounts, incredibly stifling creatively. Not to mention, he's still got business in Japan with Kenny Omega, so don't look for Ibushi to be a WWE regular anytime soon. And really, overall, Ho-Ho Lun was kind of the only disappointment from the first episode, especially since he won his match. I mean, Daivari was clearly the better wrestler of the two, and like Ho-Ho's moveset just seemed very limited. His selling was like very weak, and he just seemed kind of lost out there. Like he did not seem as ready as everybody else to be in the spot that he's been given. And I mean, maybe it was just nerves. Maybe he'll show some more in the next round, but like everything that I saw of him in the first match was just very poor and very kind of surprising that they would include him in this match. I mean, I know it's probably just because WWE wants to break into that Chinese market where it's just like such a huge untapped resource in the world of professional wrestling, but that Ho-Ho Aria Daivari match was kind of the only low point of the first episode of the Cruiserweight Classic. And next week, Tajiri takes on Damian Slater. TJ Perkins faces Dumb Mac, not the Mac, not Willie Mac, some guy named Dumb Mac, which, whatever. Mustafa Ali faces Lince Dorado, and Akira Tozawa takes on Kenneth Johnson. And I can't wait for more Cruiserweight Classic. The presentation overall is great. The focus on the handshake before the match, asking if they understand the rules, and then making a big point to announce the winners and hold up their hand in victory at the end. It makes the whole thing feel more like a sport. And plus the short hype packages before each match really helps fans get a better understanding of each participant and why they're in the Cruiserweight Classic and how they got there. And it's especially good that the Cruiserweight Classic is great since Lucha Underground is ending soon. And speaking of that, it's time for Lucha Underground. We're right in the middle of Ultima Lucha Dos, with the two-hour finale coming up this week, and the first week of Ultima Lucha showcased the For a Unique Opportunity tournament, where Son of Havoc defeated Tejano in a Boyle Heights bar fight, which was a pretty good match, and it made Son of Havoc look really strong, since he seemed to pretty easily defeat Tejano. And then he defeated the Mac in a hardcore match, well, I think it was a Falls Count Anywhere match, in the finals. And Mac had a really good match against Cage in their first round match, which was also a Falls Count Anywhere match. And after Son of Havoc won the tournament, he chose a title shot at Ultima Lucha Trace over a briefcase with $250,000 in it, which Dario Cueto's opportunities always have some kind of a twist to them. And before he could really claim his title shot, he had to defeat one more guy. A guy making his debut in Lucha Underground, Dr. Wagner Jr. And, of course, Son of Havoc ended up losing. And Dr. Wagner took the money. And Wagner is also Famous B's new client, which I'm not really sure where that leaves Masquerita Sagrada. But it's really cool to see Wagner in Lucha Underground, because he's a very big name in the world of Lucha Libre. And I've seen him wrestle live before in Philly one time. I can't remember who. I think he wrestled the original La Parca, and it was just a really great match. So I'm very interested to see what he's going to bring to Lucha Underground. And then in the second week of Ultima Lucha, Sexy Star became the new Gift of the Gods champion. And if Pentagon Jr. were to defeat Matanza and become the new champion, this would revive their feud from season one between Pentagon and Sexy Star, which I would really... That would be really interesting to see now that it has a bunch of titles on the line. Nightclaw had a pretty good showing in the Gift of the Gods scramble match, which I'm not sure who he is, if he's just some luchador I've never heard of before, but he seemed to be very well versed in a lot of different styles, like high flying and power moves and all sorts of stuff. So I think he's going to be a really good addition to the Lucha Underground roster. And also out of that match, it seems like the Marty the Moth Killshot feud is going to continue into the third season, since Marty still has Killshot's dog tags. And also, on the second week of Ultima Lucha, Mil Muertes destroyed King Cuerno in a death match, and I mean, it was a decent brawl, but like, can it really be called a death match if there's no blood? I mean, I'm not necessarily asking it for it to be better and bloodier than the last, but to me, if you're going to call something a death match, that puts certain expectations on the match. And to me, this wasn't a death match. It was like the first time they called something a death match where it was just a falls count anywhere hardcore match. I don't know. If you're going to call something a death match, have it be a death match. Otherwise, like, come up with a different name for it. That's pretty much what I'm getting at. And also, give King Cuerno, make him more important than just like such a low tier jobber who just always just serves to make other people look good. But the final huge piece of news from the second week of Ultima Lucha is that Dario Cueto killed Mr. Cisco for wearing a wire and trying to record the conversation for officers Joey Ryan and Ricky Reyes. So I gotta believe that the overarching police versus Dario Cueto storyline is only going to intensify next season. And so, with all that stuff taking place in the first 2 weeks, this leaves for the third week of Ultima Lucha Dos, which is going to be a 2-hour episode, Taya versus Ivelisse, El Dragon Azteca Jr. versus Black Lotus, the Trios title match between Johnny Mundo, PJ Black, and Jack Evans, the champions taking on Phoenix, Drago, and Aerostar, the Ultima Lucha title match, the Lucha Underground title match between Matanza and Pentagon Jr., and then Prince Puma versus Rey Mysterio, which every single time they've announced like the lineup of matches on the episodes, they've announced Puma and Rey after Matanza and Pentagon, which leads me to believe that's going to be the main event, even though it's not the title match, which doesn't really make sense to me, but I guess just because Rey Mysterio is a bigger name and more important than the title, I guess, is what they're getting at. It doesn't make sense to me because it's like, even if he's a huge name, you still want the title, your title, to be considered the most important thing in your company. But whatever, I'm not the one who's booking it. But Taya and Ivelisse is going to be great. I'm almost looking forward to that more than anything else, just because they're going to work their asses off. I have no doubt about that. Dragon versus Lotus, I think that's probably going to be more story than a match, since it's probably going to have a lot of overbooked spots and just a lot of storyline stuff going on, since there's a lot to resolve in both of their storylines. And plus, we've never seen Black Lotus wrestle yet, so like, who even knows if she really can, if she's actually a wrestler, or if she's just like a personality. I have no idea. The Trios title match is going to be really fun and could go either way. And I don't know how, but I think Pentagon Jr. is going to find some way to defeat the monster and become the Lucha Underground champion. And then Prince Puma is going to remain the face of Lucha Underground with a win over Rey Mysterio in what could easily be the match of the night. Because, I mean, Puma and Dragon Jr. had an excellent match on TV a couple of weeks ago. So I got to imagine a Puma-Rey Mysterio match is only going to be better. But it's really just hitting me now that this is the last week of Ultima Lucha, which means there's not going to be any more Lucha Underground to talk about after this coming week, which that's really depressing. But don't worry, because they've already filmed season 3. So with that, that's the end of the Lucha Underground segment. So let's get into Ring of Honor. There's not a whole lot going on in Ring of Honor at the moment, so the biggest piece of news that I've found recently is that Moose has left Ring of Honor for TNA, and it's been speculated for a long time that he was going to leave Ring of Honor, that he was getting offers from lots of other companies, but it's official that he's joining TNA since he appeared at recent TNA tapings, and Moose has come a long way in a short time in wrestling, and he already looks to be positioned pretty well in TNA, and unless TNA made him a huge offer, I kind of can't believe Ring of Honor would have let him go. And not just that, but that they never did more with him. I mean, he wasn't really in ROH for that long, and he was positioned well early within the company with a long winning streak, and then he was having face-offs with Jay Briscoe when he was still the champ, but none of that really amounted to anything. So, it's the same thing with Cedric Alexander. It's just like guys with such potential, with such a high ceiling, that Ring of Honor just kind of lets wallow for a long time and never really does anything important with. And I hope that trend doesn't keep continuing in Ring of Honor, but over the past couple of years, that seems to happen more often than not. And like I mentioned at the top of this segment, Ring of Honor is not really doing a whole lot right now. I mean, the Best in the World pay-per-view was a while ago, and it was very lackluster, and I don't really remember what happened other than the main event getting broken up by Adam Cole and Adam Page joining Bullet Club. Well, I guess Page joined later, but whatever. It's equally irrelevant. And I don't watch the TV show because it's so far behind the current live product that, again, it's almost irrelevant. They had a house show. Well, I think it was TV tapings, actually, this past Saturday in Philadelphia, which I couldn't go to because I had to work. But other than that, there's not really anything going on in Ring of Honor until their next big show, Death Before Dishonor 14, which is a month away. Like, if you go to their website and go to the live shows, they had this show in Philly that just happened, and then the next thing is Death Before Dishonor, which is a month away in Las Vegas or something. And when you look at everything as big picture right now, it's like I kind of can't help but feel that Ring of Honor is falling behind everyone else right now. I mean, even though they have this partnership with New Japan and a nice-looking new set for their live shows, they aren't really doing anything exciting, and they're failing to create any kind of new important stars for their company. I mean, Jay Lethal has had the title for a year, and he's got no credible opponents left. They did nothing to help elevate War Machine during their short title run, and they had them drop the belts on a house show. Bobby Fish is the TV champ, which is cool, but, I mean, he's not in a feud at the moment, and he's kind of just doing nothing other than being the TV champ. The All Night Express is doing some weird thing where they're calling themselves the Cabinet now, and it's almost like that CZW angle a few years ago where it was like the Crusade for Change. They're trying to make it a better company for people to work. I don't know. I don't know what the hell the Cabinet are doing. It doesn't even matter. The Addiction are also there. I guess they're still the tag champs, right? I don't even know. And that's not a good thing. And there's also, like, Kyle O'Reilly is there, but doing who knows what. Dalton Castle is there, but doing who knows what. I don't know what's going on with Ring of Honor right now, but none of it's good. And none of it's exciting. None of it's making people want to watch Ring of Honor. And that's a big, big problem. And I mentioned Death Before Dishonor before. It's still a month away or so, and there's no matches announced yet. Well, I think there's one that I know of, which I'll get to, but there's a bunch of New Japan stars that are booked for Death Before Dishonor. There's going to be several debuts from guys like Toriano is going to be there, the Gorillas of Destiny. I'm not sure if Tama Tonga's ever been in Ring of Honor before, but I know that Tangaloa hasn't, so it's technically a debut. And also, a guy that people have been yelling about and just dying to see in America for a long time, Katsuyori Shibata, is booked for Death Before Dishonor, and that's pretty exciting. Also signed are Tanahashi, Okada, Naito, Evil, RPG Vice, and Kamataichi is going to be there, which is cool. And also, Yujiro Takahashi is also signed, but I mean, I can't imagine that is exciting anybody to see him in America. And also, Yujiro being on the show kind of makes me really nervous that they're going to have the Briscoes drop the IWGP heavyweight tag belts to Yujiro Takahashi and Adam Page, because, ooh, that would just be awful. And also, let's hope that Ring of Honor starts going over in a few of these interpromotional matches, since since the last time they booked a lot of New Japan guys on a show, which was, I think, the anniversary show, the New Japan guys won practically every single meeting. And it's just like, this is your Ring of Honor anniversary show. This is supposed to be celebrating all the years that Ring of Honor has been in business. And all you're doing is letting these New Japan guys go over all of your quote unquote stars. That doesn't make any sense. And I mentioned it before, the only match that I know of off the top of my head for Death Before Dishonor that's been announced so far is the match that Shibata's going to be in. And like this, that more than anything else, people are probably going to be excited about, like, oh, what's Shibata going to be doing? Who's he going to be wrestling? Is it going to be in a tag match? Is it going to be a singles? What is it? Is it going to be against Adam Cole or Kyle O'Reilly? Maybe he's going to get a title match against Jay Lethal. Now, Ring of Honor thought that the best use of Shibata in his first U.S. match would be against Silas Young. I can't explain it. Not to trash talk Silas Young. I mean, he's a solid worker, and they've been like trying to get him over as a big-time heel in Ring of Honor. That hasn't really panned out, and not necessarily because Silas isn't a good wrestler or a good heel, but it's just... There's so many other matches that they could have done with Shibata in his first big U.S. appearance other than Silas Young. I don't know. Ring of Honor really needs to step his game up because right now it's just... it's just not good. But that's all I have for Ring of Honor, so let's get into New Japan and round out the show with some indie news.
Young!
It only happens once a year, and it's finally coming up again. The New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 Climax 26 starts on Monday, followed by shows on, Monday the 18th, followed by shows on the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and 25th, running all the way through, I think it was like August 14th or something, or 13th, something like that, somewhere around there, whatever. But the first day of matches starts off with Block A matches between IWGP champ Kazuchika Okada taking on Naomichi Marufuji. Tanahashi takes on Sonata. Hiroki Goto takes on Bad Luck Fale. Togi Makabe takes on Tama Tonga. And Hiroyoshi Tenzan versus Tomohiro Ishii. And it's a pretty good day of matches for the first, a pretty good way to start the G1 Climax 26. Tenzan versus Ishii, like, really, that could go either way. I'd imagine they'll probably put Tenzan over in a bunch of these matches just to give him, you know, a little something to go out on, a little high note to go out on. So he might go over Ishii in this match. Tama Tonga is probably going to beat Togi Makabe just because I think they're going to start trying to push Tonga a little bit more this year. So we'll see how that goes. Fale versus Goto. I imagine they're going to build up Fale early in this tournament so that people can get some... when people get wins over him later in the tournament, it'll be more impressive. But the final two matches are the ones I'm really looking forward to. Tanahashi versus Sonata. I mean, that could really go either way. I feel like Sonata's probably going to go over. It's like, you got to have... Because he's a brand new guy, and if they want to make him seem important, they got to give him some important wins, and there's almost no win more important than over Hiroshi Tanahashi. And Okada versus Marufuji, I mean, I want to say it could go either way, but Okada's probably going to end up winning just because Marufuji's coming in from a different different company, and because Okada is the champ. So Okada's probably going to win more often than not, but just like barely get bumped out of being in the finals because he's the champ, so there's no reason that he should go to the finals or win. And also on that first day of shows, there's also a bunch of multi-man matches, but they're mostly mishmash teams of like opener guys and low card guys. So most of the time G1 tag matches are just skippable and you really just want to get to the meat of the tournament. And I mentioned that there's several shows on consecutive days following this first day of shows. But the first day of Block B matches are Shibata taking on Hanma, Nagata taking on Naito, Michael Elgin versus Evil, Yoshihashi versus Kenny Omega, Toru Yano, and Toru Yano versus Nakajima. I can't remember what his first name is. And Block B is starting a little bit slower than A in terms of high-profile matches, but there are a lot of matches in Block B that I can't wait for, like Evil versus Elgin, Shibata versus Omega, and Omega versus Naito, which that should be an amazing match. And I might have went over this on the last episode, but I can't recall. But to me, it's looking like Tetsuya Naito is going to win the G1 this year. I mean, he's the top heel in the company, and he's had a heated feud going with Okada for a while now. So easy money is on Tetsuya Naito to win the G1 Climax 26. And conventional thinking might be that Kenny Omega also has a shot to win. You know, since he's a heavyweight now, he recently lost the IC belt, so he can go after. He's free to go after another singles title, and he's a top heel. But I mean, I just can't imagine that New Japan would put a gaijin in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom. But not only that, but the odds are against him even more because a gaijin, an outsider, basically in Japanese, has never won the G1 tournament, so it's pretty unlikely that Kenny Omega would win. And as much as I want him to win, it's probably not going to happen. But still, this G1 could produce some of the best matches in recent years. In recent G1 years, whatever. I mean, a lack of AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, or Carl Anderson is definitely a problem. But I see guys like Shibata, Omega, and Elgin working hard to pick up that slack. Plus, I can see Tama Tonga making the most of his first G1, and I also think that Yoshihashi is going to surprise a lot of people. I mean, Yoshi might be mostly a joke, but I think he's going to take on Hanma's role as the underdog in this tournament. And it'll also be interesting to see how Tenzan fares, since Satoshi Kojima gave up his spot in the tournament to his buddy Tenzan, who was like heartbroken over the fact that he wasn't included. And Tenzan has said that this is going to be his final G1, and he's, you know, on nearing the end of his career, but he's still capable of putting on fun matches with the right opponents, and I think that his first match with Ishii should be an example of that. And now moving on from New Japan, going to round out the show with some indie news. The final participants for the PWG Battle of Los Angeles have been announced, and the entire lineup is as follows. Cody Rhodes, Kamataichi, Jeff Cobb / the Monster Matanza, Mark Haskins, Dalton Castle, Pete Dunne, Sammy Callahan, Tommy End, Trevor Lee, Adam Cole, Johnny Mundo, Jack Gallagher, Chris Hero, Mark Andrews, Ricochet, Matt Riddle, Marty Scurll, Matt Sydal, Kyle O'Reilly, and Phoenix. And the final four that were announced altogether were Zack Sabre Jr., Will Ospreay, Pentagon Jr., and Jushin Thunder Liger. That's fucking insanity. Like, that's a really stacked lineup overall. I mean, there's new guys in there like Cody Rhodes and Jeff Cobb. You got guys like Dalton Castle and Trevor Lee and Sammy Callahan, who are all big, big indie names. Johnny Mundo also is a huge name. That's never been in Battle Los Angeles before. I mean, there's tons of British talent in there that are making their PWG debut, like Mark Haskins and Pete Dunne and Jack Gallagher, who's also in the Cruiserweight Classic, so anybody who's familiar with that should recognize his name. Plus, just Zack Sabre is the champ right now, so, I mean, usually the champ is cursed going into Battle Los Angeles, and people who win never end up having good runs in the next one that they're in. We'll see if Zack can overcome that, especially since his big antagonist, Roderick Strong, isn't around anymore. But just the simple fact that PWG was able to book Liger for Battle Los Angeles is just, it's mind-blowing. I never would have expected somebody like Liger to show up in Bola. And There's still no word on when tickets are going to go on sale, but you can bet that I'm going to be trying my ass off to get out there. I can't wait to see what matchups are in the first round of Battle Los Angeles, because it promises a lot of interesting first-time meetings and clashes of styles. And I'm also really looking forward to see how Cody Rhodes is received and how he's acclimating to the independent scene in America. Plus, I really want to see guys like Matt Riddle in PWG and in Battle Los Angeles and see how they handle themselves. I want to see the newer British guys that I'm not familiar with, because like Marty Scurll and Ospreay and Mark Andrews, they've all been making their names in PWG for like the past year or so. But new guys like Haskins and Gallagher and Dunn that I'm not familiar with, I feel like could really make a big impact. So just overall, this battle is like, I feel like it's said every single year that this is the best looking tournament so far, but like honestly, this is the best looking Battle Los Angeles that I've ever seen. And one guy who would definitely have been a shoo-in to be in Battle Los Angeles, who is banned from America for the foreseeable future, Mike Speedball Bailey. He's still out there. He's still working in Canada. I know he's been getting bookings in Britain and I think in Mexico as well. But he's going to be debuting for DDT in Japan pretty soon, which is awesome. And I think this is the first time that he's ever worked in Japan. I mean, I don't know for sure, but DDT should be a great fit for Speedball, who, if I had to guess, will probably play up like a Karate Kid kind of gimmick. Because, I mean, that's already sort of his gimmick, but like things are just like way over the top and turned up to 1,000 in DDT, especially in terms of like the comedic element. So, I mean, it sucks that he's banned from entering America for the next several years, but it's great that he's still working in Canada and he's getting booked internationally, because Speedball is one of my favorite guys in recent years to show up on the indies, and I hope that one day he comes back to America and he's still wrestling and he's still only more popular and more well-polished by then. Chikara's King of Trios tournament is actually the same weekend as Battle Los Angeles, which is September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and which is unfortunate, but there's not usually too much crossover between guys that are in Chikara and guys that would be in Battle Los Angeles. So if you are stuck on the East Coast and you can't make your way out to Los Angeles for Bola, Chikara's King of Trios is a pretty good substitute. A few teams have been announced so far, and it seems like there's many more teams of females than there have ever been before in King of Trios, such as Team Shimmer, Madison Eagles, Candice LeRae, and Crazy Mary Dobson, and Team Original Divas, Victoria, Mickey James, and Jazz. And also, the most recent team announced is pretty interesting. Team CWC, Johnny Gargano, Drew Gulak, and Cedric Alexander. Gargano and Gulak have been in Chikara before, but I don't know if Cedric ever has been. And King Trios is always a really fun show. It's always a really fun weekend of shows. And they also usually run a mini tournament over that weekend with the Rey de Valladares tournament, which usually features like up-and-coming high flyers, and sometimes there's some veteran high flyers in there as well, but that's always a good filler for the later part of the tournament where, you know, guys have worked several matches in a night and they need to break up the tournament matches a little bit more. And my final indie note for this week, Chuck Taylor, a.k.a. Dustin, a.k.a. Big Dust, made his Evolve debut on Saturday night and won the Evolve tag titles with Drew Galloway. And it was really unexpected, but probably one of the best pieces of news I've read in a long time. I've always hoped that Chucky T would start getting more recognition in pro wrestling, and hopefully a spot in Evolve is a step in the right direction for him. And with that, it looks like I'm out of here. Thanks for listening. You can find the Solid B Plus podcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Archie, JoeArchy. Give the show a like on Facebook, rate and review, and subscribe on iTunes to help get more visibility. The show will show up, you know, whenever it is I do it. You don't have to go hunting for it. It's just where it's better all around. It's better for everybody. So just get out there and subscribe and rate and review and like. Follow me on iTunes or Twitter, whatever. I'm out of here. Thanks for listening.